Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live, and today's guest is going to be so much fun that I can't even start the conversation, so I'm going to let her do it. Carol Eta White, who is doing many things on her own, and is many things on her own, but let's just start with the fact that her father was Jesse White, the actor, who I'm sure you all know of him. And so you just start there, because that had to be interesting.
Okay. And well, most people would know my dad, Jesse, the aforementioned Jesse White, as the Maytag repairman.
Yes, the loneliest.
The loneliest man in town, the original Maytag repairman for 25 years,
wow.
I might say.
I didn't realize that long.
Oh, yeah, 25 years. I was born in New York City. My father was doing a play with Jimmy Stewart wasn't in the play.
He did the movie. Right.
I'm trying to think. I can't think of the actor's name. It was before my time. I was 6 months old when they brought my dad to Hollywood to do this movie.
Oh.
And the movie was Harvey, mm-hmm. about the Invisible Rabbit. And
that's how you came to L.A.?
How we came to Los Angeles from New York City. I was born on the hottest day of the year. In August, 1949.
Okay.
And we moved out. They put my dad under contract. My father never looked back. And here we are still today in this city.
Were you aware of who he was? And the reason I ask that is because everybody in some sense, whatever your natural surrounding is, whatever your own wallpaper is, seems normal.
Exactly. That's exactly right. You know, I was aware that my dad was special because everywhere we went, people were always, right this way, Mr. White. Great to see you, Jesse. Oh, Jesse, tell her that was so funny. You know, they made a big deal out of my dad wherever we went, so I got that, that he was special. Now, Universal every year would make one of their contract players be Santa Claus. And the way that I found out there was no real Santa Claus was that one year I was four. We were at Universal. My dad was the Santa Claus. And, you know, there he was. I didn't know it was him. I'm thinking, I'm taking a picture with Santa Claus. I got on his knee, and I'm looking at him, and I'm looking at him, and there's all of a sudden.
Familiar.
Yeah, it was familiar. Anyway, that was, I guess, my first big disappointment. But we lived in Beverly Hills. I went to school with Donna Reed's son was in my class. Danny Thomas's son. I went to school with Carl Reiner's daughter. Just the list goes on and on.
Sure.
And it really was the wealth mm-hmm. of the city and the glittering nature of Beverly Hills. To those of us children who were raised there in the 50s and even the 60s, we didn't have a sense that it was anything special.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just life as it is.
Exactly. We would ride our bikes into Beverly Hills and go to Nate Nell's, the local deli, for pickles and cokes and fries after school.
Yes, of course.
And that was it. We'd go to have dinner at Ah Fung's, and mm-hmm. Paul Newman would be there, or Tony Curtis would be there, and always come over to the table. Benson Fong.
You're saying the other people would come over to
say hi to
your dad.
Come over and say hi to my dad.
Right.
Benson Fong would come over. And it was just normal.
That's the thing.
That was
just
life.
Normal. Yes.
I didn't realize, now that I'm out in the world and have a few gray hairs, I realized.
Which you can't see in that gorgeous mass of red.
Oh, thank
but
you.
Anyway,
thank
yes.
you. You. Yeah, yeah. Put on your glasses.
No, anyway, I don't. Go ahead. I just took us off track.
That's okay.
So it seemed normal, yes.
At
what point did you realize it was not normal, that there was the rest of the world who did not?
I guess, truly, when I went to college, mm-hmm. my first 2 years at Arizona State University in Scottsdale. No, in Tempe, Arizona.
Oh, yes.
Sorry. Tempe, Arizona. And I was in the drama department and the music department. Mm-hmm. And a young man in the drama department, we were sitting outside. Someone I was in a class with. He said to me, "Oh, are you Jewish? Are you Jewish?" Uh-huh. And I said, "Yes." "Why?" He said, "Well, I've never met a real Jew." And I said, "Oh, okay. All right."
Well, there are lots of people who haven't. Yes.
That's right. True, but like expecting me to be something other than just regular person.
Well, how nice that you were this wonderful instruction for him.
Yes, right, yes. Right.
So I'm guessing.
He ended up being a good friend.
Oh, good. Okay.
But anyway, just growing up and going through my parents' illnesses and death, and I lived with my mother and two of her sisters for 8 years, and they were all in wheelchairs and I'll just say diapers, let's say.
Sure.
And what it did was I never had kids. I never was married. I was always high diddly D in actor's life for me. So it allowed me to put my priorities in order.
Well, I have a question that's
darling.
Off, and I don't mean to sound totally insensitive here, but you seem like you could not have been a spoiled child. I mean, you're so down to earth and lovely, and you must have gotten somewhere along the line wonderful messages about how you lived your life and what priorities really were.
From my mother.
Uh-huh.
My mother had seven sisters, and she was the ringleader of the sisters. She was the smartest. They were from New York. They grew up in the Depression. She, at 15, she was so smart. They gave her a scholarship to Barnard College in New York. At 15, she had to turn it down because she had to work at Farkas Department Store in the ladies' bra department at 15 to bring money home to feed the family.
Mm-hmm.
But she always had the philosophy of give. Paper man at the corner of Santa Monica and Melrose, he would be at our house for dinner. God bless my mother.
Really?
She always bringing people in. She raised her nephew. She took care of her mother, her father's mother, took care of her sisters. So I guess I did get it from my mother.
By example and probably by genetics, right?
By example, sure.
Right.
By example. And she and my dad met in a acting workshop in New York City. And my dad started working, and he made a decision. I guess in those days, men could make decisions for their wives. And he said, there's only one star in the family.
Oh, really?
So she put her dreams aside, and he was the star in the family. Yeah.
Did you sense a feeling of loss from her over that, or...?
It was never expressed directly, but she'd play the piano, she'd sing around the house,
dance,
and she really did a beautiful job taking care of my sister and myself, you know.
I can see that, yes. Oh. And you also have the lovely quality, if I may just presume, of you don't take yourself too seriously.
Oh, have you looked outside and read the news? There are so many starving, hungry people.
No, I understand
how
that.
How can
but
you take yourselves
seriously? Well, that's how I feel.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, that was a direct instruction to me. Don't ever take yourself too seriously as the center of this universe. You are but a blip.
Right.
And it's a very comforting kind of a yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because kids who grew up in that milieu, as you did, sometimes do take themselves as a little too important. And they pay for it later.
Definitely. Yeah. Today, I think, sadly, with, I'll just say new money in the strangest hands. That's a whole nother show.
Well, there's a group of more money than manners.
The more money than manners. I'm going to remember that.
Yes.
But I tell you, Yeah, we grew up with values. You know, I have a friend from grade school and high school whose family was created Ready Whip whipped cream,
yeah.
Right? And they got the patent for the aerosol can. Mm-hmm. And they have more, you know, they're right up there. But you'd never know.
Okay, you know, I have a friend, actually. Oh, that's so interesting. The people who do that kind of, I have a friend whose grandfather invented the alarm clock. And the wax milk carton. I know.
Oh, my God.
But somebody has to invent those things.
I know. Wish it was us.
Me too.
Right?
Or porta potties or toilet seat protectors.
Or the fax.
Right.
Or the computer.
But even simpler things.
Oh, a wax carton. Ingenious invention, right?
Yes. And also a family. This woman is, I mean, she's a brilliant artist and yada da, and I know this isn't about her, but also you would never know it. It came out in conversation.
Right. Oh, that's amazing.
Ready Whip.
Ready Whip whipped cream and the aerosol can.
That's something.
Yeah. But these were people who, and here's another thing, you wouldn't know, we were just kids,
right.
And you wouldn't know their parents had money because, we were raised with regular values.
Yes.
Be kind to others. You see somebody needs a hand, help them up.
That description of your mother just makes me want to cry. I mean, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
she
was an amazing giving woman.
So tell me what you're doing now. Somebody told me that you were doing stand-up.
You know,
what has your own career been?
Well, I started working in 1971 or 72. I was in a comedy workshop with Harvey Lembeck, character actor Harvey Lembeck. We did improvisation. It was the first place in town that did improvisation, but it was before the Comedy Store. In my class was John Ritter and Al Molinaro, Penny Marshall, and like Carol Burnett and her husband would come down and just watch us and laugh and laugh. And the very first week I got my union cards, I did a Carol Burnett show. We did improvs on the Carol Burnett show. And I got a movie for television called Evil Roy Slade with Milton Berle, Mickey Rooney, John Astin, Dick Shawn, the amazing Dick Shawn. And I played Homely Girl in Bank.
Credited.
Right, credited. Homely Girl in Bank. Penny was in the same scene. My best friend, Monica Johnson, the writer, was also in the scene. John Astin comes in and kisses all the pretty girls. He's robbing the bank. He comes in while he's robbing. He kisses all the pretty girls. He gets to me, holds me in his arms, takes a look, changes his mind. So that's how my career started. But Gary Marshall and Jerry Belson wrote and produced it. They then years later, did the Laverne and Shirley show.
Yes.
So Gary knew me from that. And that's how I got onto Laverne and Shirley. After Laverne and Shirley.
Were you recurring?
I was. I did, I think I did 11, 12 episodes.
Yes, so, I mean, I know that show so well.
My character was Big Rosie Greenbaum.
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, my goodness.
Big Rosie, yes. Bimbo with the Bucks.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, yes, yes.
The envy of every properly behaved girl in... yes. Oh, of course.
Yes. She was a bimbo, and she would flash her credit cards at Penny and Cindy and get
that,
into fist fights with Laverne and... it was a lot of fun. That was an awful lot of fun.
You know, I don't know what the rest of the world is like, and maybe you have something to say about this, but I am not good at distinguishing people in real life from their TV personas.
I understand. I understand completely. And you know what?
By the way, even if you looked exactly the same in film, I wouldn't be able to do it.
You got an actor there.
Exactly right. What I was going to say is yes.
Yeah, and that's what would happen to me. I'd go and do talk shows because Laverne and Shirley and Happy Days were number one and number two in the ratings back in those years. And so I was on the talk shows and play the game shows and all that. And fans would come up afterward and they'd say,
"Who are you?"
No, they would say, "Oh, you're not so mean. Oh, you're so nice. Oh, you're not mean like, you know."
Yes.
That's where, no, that's Rosie is just the character.
You know? It's not so easy. And, you know, different movies is one thing. You can do that. But television, where you are in our living room and bedroom every week.
Right.
And so much a part of our lives.
Right.
That, it's a totally different relationship.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's slightly off-putting. Because
for you or for us?
For me. Oh, uh-huh. For me, as a quote-unquote, I don't think of myself as a celebrity, but in those days,
sure.
Someone would come up and say something, and I'd be on the road, and it would be heartwarming to actually talk to someone and have interaction, because it's a little lonely on the road. But you'd talk, and you'd be sharing something, and you'd realize they weren't really listening so much as they're sort of just looking at you like you're, I don't know what. So they're a little afraid to open up and really be vulnerable, and they're just sort of looking at you like you're some sort of, I don't know.
Oh, the celebrity.
Celebrity thing.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's a little peculiar,
right.
You know.
Isolating.
And isolating. Thank you. That's exactly it.
Are you doing comedy again now, or continuing?
I have started to write a theater piece for myself, and I'm going to do it.
It's the pretty girl at the bank, I hope.
Yes, yeah. Right. Just, you know, about life and how we are all really connected.
Yes.
And we may look a little different, each of us, but we all want to have a good meal, get a good night's sleep, love our children, see our grandkids. All of us want the same thing worldwide for our families. And we have more in common than
for sure.
We do. I also, I have lupus, the disease lupus, which is an autoimmune disease.
I didn't know that.
And I am learning about it. And
is this a recent diagnosis?
I was diagnosed in 2010.
Oh, so not so recent.
Not so recent. I didn't know what was the matter with me. But I'm learning about lupus, learning how lupus can be brought on by PTSD. And
really?
That is what happened to myself. But it has...
can track it to a particular...
To three particular, I lost my fiance, my best friend, and my uncle. I was his caregiver for a while, within 2 months.
Oh, my goodness,
and
how awful.
I was at their deathbeds and holding them in my arms, this kind of thing. And I took care of my mother and her sisters. And finally, me the strong one in the family. I was the single one. And so I was given the honor of being with my parents, being with my aunts, my uncle. You know, they had no one, so they'd call on me. And finally, it got me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't
mm-hmm.
know what it was. My body broke down, and I discovered I had... do have lupus, and I want to be a spokesman for people with lupus because it is one of these invisible diseases where people can't see you're not feeling well because you look normal.
Yes.
And just trying to explain
that.
That's
nice that you said that, because I think when people are newly diagnosed with anything, how frightening that can be. And to hear from somebody who is living with any of a number of conditions.
Right.
Oh, it's just encouraging.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's good.
And honestly, for the first couple of years, after I lost those very close people in my universe, I was kind of waylaid for a while.
Yeah.
But then I went back to acting, and I was around artists, and I was around a teacher, Richard Lawson, who's my mentor, and he lit the fire in me again to pursue my art, and that has given me a whole new lease on life.
So nice. Oh, I love listening to you. I have a question to ask you, because
please.
My thrust is kind of love letters.
Oh, yes.
Which is any truth put to paper.
Okay.
In a compassionate way. I mean, you can also write a hate letter. One woman in a workshop wanted to know if she could. And why not? Nobody listens to them. If you write a letter that is filled with anger, it goes in the wastebasket, and they think you're nuts.
Right.
So, you know, any kind of a letter that expresses appreciation or love, anything from a good seduction to an apology, anything. And every one of life's moments has within it the seeds of a letter to somebody that's going to make somebody else feel graceful and valuable. If you were to write a letter right now, who would it be? Do you write letters? Did you ever?
I love communicating now through the email.
Sure, I do too.
It's fantastic because you think of something and you can send it right off to the person.
Yes, it's lovely. I mean, I love it. I'm addicted to it. It's like a slow telephone conversation.
Exactly.
Because then the answer comes back. But, you know, the only thing that the reason that I think letters beat out email in the long run is, as I like to say, if somebody gets a letter from you, they're touching something that's felt the touch of your hand.
Oh, yes.
Maybe, you know, you've put a kiss on it.
Yes.
And also, it lasts for longer. I have letters that are 100 and some years old, and you can still read them.
Yes.
Anything you do on email, unless you've printed it out on good paper,
yes,
it's gone.
I agree. I have letters that my uncle wrote to my aunt.
Well, then you do. Okay.
Oh my gosh. I have kept letters. My mother took a trip to Europe, as did my father. I'm thinking of a particular trip to Greece. And I have these letters in my drawer. And when I, like you say, when I take it out and I read it,
what does that handwriting do to you?
It moves me to tears, and like you say,
doesn't it bring a person
back? I kiss the letter that my mother held, that my mother wrote my darling daughter.
Yeah, everybody does. Yes.
And if I would write a letter to my mother today?
Wait, don't say if, because you can.
Okay.
Oh, you should. I don't like to be the love letter police, but to write one to her and mail it to yourself, or do you have relatives? You could write it and mail it to yourself if you felt like it. Dear Mom, it's been a long time, but I just wanted to catch you up on my life.
What a good idea.
Those are beautiful.
What a good idea.
And you carry a lot of history with you, as I'm seeing. Would it be nice to write that down in some form? Like a
Absolutely.
Series of love letters to whoever, one to your dad and one to your aunts and one to whoever the kids in your class were. And then because someday, Carol, those are going to be found. I mean, good paper, indelible ink.
Yes.
Someday those will be found by some stranger who will have something that's just solid gold of history in 1970s.
I hear you. I hear you.
Oh, well,
I'm going to do it. You're a beautiful inspiration to do that.
And it feels good to do it because as you're doing, you're just bathing. Talk about the things that bring on lupus.
Yeah.
And stress-related difficulties.
Yeah.
When you're doing that, I just want to say you are doing nothing. See, you're smiling at even the thought of it. I wish this were a television moment. You are bathing in the positive.
Beautiful.
And you will see that your breathing changes. Oh,
I can't wait. I can't wait to do that. Write a letter to my mom.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really is. She'd be very, I always think that she is somehow spiritually around me anyway and guiding me. Whenever I see the number 517, that was our address on Rexford Drive.
Oh, I know people on that block. Okay, never mind.
We'll
do this later.
Yes. But whenever I see the number 517 anywhere, I think, oh, it's my mom letting me know she's with me.
I believe those things. Yes.
You know, my boyfriend, who's a complete pragmatist and realist, he just looks at me and shakes his head. And he gives me a lot of room just to, you know,
yes,
to be myself. Because right. He knows you better. Right? Anyway, so I have been doing stand-up. My stand-up is really little pieces of my one-woman show that I try out just to see where the laughs are.
The one that you're writing now.
The one that I'm writing,
yes.
Yeah. The one that I'm writing. I tell you, go ahead.
I was going to say, I hope we get to see that play.
Oh, I do too.
Sooner than later.
sooner, please, sooner.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've gotten very active. active since the election.
Uh-huh.
I can't stop eating since the election. Carbs, 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 more carbs. But we need to be alert.
Yes, we do.
In society, and
yes,
we need to lend a helping hand when we can.
Thank you.
You know, go out and lick a few envelopes and do what we can.
By the way, I have found also, because I've done it a couple of times, that writing love letters essentially to the politicians who are doing things you like is huge, because, you know, they get the other kind. And I've had some experiences where the letters, first of all, if you write something in appreciation to somebody, it's only normal for them to want to do more of that.
Yes.
You know, we are creatures of pushing the pleasure button.
Exactly.
And it feels good. And I found that that's really effective.
Yes. And also writing those kinds of letters to the people that you want to move their position by opening with the positive. Thank you for caring about your constituents and for
credit
us
them that they have the ability to do it.
To care, right?
Okay, that's great. Well, I want to thank you for doing this with me. I am so
glad
we met.
Me too.
And if you want to talk about some other things at any other time, come back and do another one.
I'd love to. You are so lively and delightful bright. I feel as if I know you.
Yes, me too. I felt that way when you walked in. There's some people you meet, and I'll just say this before closing, because you're definitely one of them for me, that you wonder why it feels like you've known somebody your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't done this, but I bet we could go back a couple of generations and find...
We're cousins.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yes. Okay. So for now, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. And thank you again. And I hope we get Carolita White back.
Thank you, Janet.
Okay, darling. Bye.
Bye.